Thank you and good evening. This is the City of Morro Bay City Council. This is a regular meeting. It's Tuesday, January the 12th, 2021. It's 5:30 p.m. This meeting is being held via teleconference. Pursuant to Section 3 of Executive Order N29-20, issued by Governor Newsom on March 17th, 2020, this meeting will be conducted telephonically through Zoom and broadcast live on cable channel 20 and streamed on the city website. Please be advised that pursuant to the executive order and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread the COVID-19 virus, the Veterans Hall will not be open for this meeting or any meetings in the near future. Thank you, and Madam Clerk, could you please establish a quorum of council members?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councilmember Addis. Councilmember Addis just joined the meeting. Yes, she's here. And Councilmember Barton.
I'm here.
Councilmember Davis.
I am present.
Councilmember Heller.
Yep.
And Mayor Hedding.
Present. Thank you. We do have a quorum. I will go ahead and call the meeting to order. And in the regard to the recent events that have occurred in our country, as well as the significant impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and an increase significantly in not only the number of cases, but deaths, not only in San Luis Obispo County, in the state of California and across the country. I would like everyone in your own way to take a moment of silence, paying honor and laying out your respects in your own way. And let's just take that moment right now. Thank you. Thank you very much. And with that, I will ask our clerk to display the flag and we will have the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag, of the United States,
of America,
and to the Republic, for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible. Liberty and justice for all.
Justice for all.
Thank you for that, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. City Attorney, Chris Neumeyer, do we have a closed session report, sir, this evening?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, and Happy New Year, Morro Bay. No closed session items to report.
Thank you, Chris, very much. We appreciate that. We'll move to mayor and council members' reports, announcements, and presentations. Council member Addis, would you like to lead us off?
That would be great. Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, everybody who is joining tonight. I did want to open up with a serious topic. I was very alarmed by the insurrection at the Capitol, which feels like it happened an incredibly long time ago now, but really it was just on January 6th. 6 days ago, we had heard that five people died. Another person died, was announced, died today, that a second police officer was murdered there. And in my lifetimes, and I would say in the lifetimes of most people present this evening, there's never been a worse attack on our democracy. And it's my personal belief that it's our job as elected officials to stand up for the people and to stand up for the system that allows all of us to be in office and to be representing the community tonight. I know that many people might think that the insurrection at the Capitol happened far away or that it really doesn't affect local government. But we have to remember that as representatives, we are here because of free and fair elections that have a long history in our nation, both at the presidential level, but also at the very local level. And it's really up to each of us to participate in our democracy and to stand up for what's right. And this week, we received a letter from Women's March San Luis Obispo. And what it said is Women's March Slow organizers join calls for President Donald Trump's immediate removal from office, either by invoking the 25th Amendment or by impeachment, for inciting violence against the government of the United States, and that Donald Trump's bid to overturn the results of the free and fair election that he lost cannot be met with silence, that our democracy belongs to the people, that it is imperative that we hold those who violently attacked our Capitol and who promoted such attacks responsible, and that we call on every local official to support this effort. And Women's March Slow went on to say, please join us by using your platform and speak out for the sake of our democracy. So I am going to use my own platform to speak out for this, but I also will be asking my colleagues at the end of this meeting, and I hope each of you will join me in speaking out. And it's my hope that as a body, we can speak up for our democracy later when we get to future agenda items. Beyond that, I have a couple more announcements in this same vein, but I did want to just pause for a moment so folks could take that in. Beyond that, through Women's March San Luis Obispo, we do have three events coming up, all of them having to do with powering up our democracy. On January 13th, tomorrow, we have Answering the Call, which is a Zoom event where local leaders are interviewed about how they're answering the call to support community action, mostly in the time of COVID. On January 16th, we have a happy hour. It's an interactive Zoom as we get ready for January 3rd, which is just 3 days after the inauguration, where we will have an event featuring Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kunalakis, as well as a number of other state legislators, activists, and our resident poet, Diane Sousa, and all of that's found at womensmarchslow.com. But the reason I'm weaving these two together is that it's incredibly important for all of us to be thinking at this time about what we're doing to participate in our democracy and what we're going to be doing across the next days until the inauguration to make sure that we have a peaceful transfer of power and that we use our voices as elected officials and as citizens and residents to do the right thing. So thank you.
Thank you for that, Councilmember Addis. Councilmember Davis, sir, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to recognize one of our special Morro-based citizens tonight, Ruth Schuler. Ruth has adopted Quintana Road between Main Street and the roundabout, where she picks up trash along that section every day, as well as anywhere else she finds debris, as she walks around the city. She likes to say that she knows the location of every trash can in Morro Bay. Ruth also returns abandoned shopping carts to the stores where they belong. And she works as a volunteer at the senior center when it's open. So I want to thank Ruth for helping to make Morro Bay a kinder and more lovely place to live. We appreciate you very much. And that's all for me, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis. Always appreciate your recognitions of our wonderful community members. Councilmember Heller, sir, please.
Got to get the video on. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My announcement, I'd like to concur with Council Members Addis's comment. Very disturbing what's happened in Washington. And even though I believe that all politics is local, certain things happen on national, international levels that I think requires local officials to speak. I sent my letter a few days ago to elected officials at higher levels, calling for the removal of the President of the United States. I would hope that this body would act and support a similar letter, whether it's the Women's Slow Group or our own letter. I don't think it's too late to act. I think we can still act. I still think it's important that we go on record, even though we're a little town here of 10,000 people. So I wanted to support Don in that, and that is my announcement.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Very much appreciate that. Councilmember Barton, please.
Oh, good evening. I don't have any particular things to report, so I'll save my time for another meeting.
Thank you so much. Excuse me. Thank you, Councilmember Addis, for your report, and Councilmember Heller for echoing that. I'm sorry, just and I assume obviously we will wait till future agenda items. Pardon me to have further commentary regarding that. So thank you. You know, we're in the middle of a pandemic, community members have gotten extremely difficult, intense. The numbers across the country, but also primarily in the state of California, and now within our own county, are skyrocketing. You can go to readyslow.org and look at the details of it. I'm not going to read the extensive report that they do provide. Needless to say, yesterday we had a single day total of 500 new cases in San Luis Obispo County. Our death rate has increased significantly. If there's good news in this, one piece of good news is that as a county, we do have and maintain adequate ICU bed capacity and hospital capacity. Although that is getting strained, we do have 38 ICU beds available, with only 15 currently being occupied by COVID-19 patients. And that's good news for us, but for a majority of the Southern California region counties and hospitals, ICU bed capacity is at the level where there literally is no capacity, and it is straining the system from a resource standpoint, from the standpoint of the ability to care for patients. And a number of facilities are moving towards something that I have not seen in my 45-year-plus healthcare career, and that is having to triage patients and make decisions on who will be treated and who will not be treated in certain hospitals in Southern California because of the lack of resources. And this is a significant strain on our system. I wanted to let you know that We have increased in the last month. Our average daily case rate has literally doubled. We are beginning to see the continuous impacts of the holiday with regard to holiday travel and holiday gatherings. The case count in Morro Bay specifically as a community has gone up significantly, as you probably know. Again, fortunately, we do remain one of the lower percent communities with regard to COVID-19, but things are beginning to deteriorate rapidly. I wanted to point out issues with regard to vaccinations, because I think this is the bright spot in the system, and I wanted to give you an update on the availability of vaccinations and more specifically what will be occurring in our county with regard to the vaccination schedule. I've been getting many calls from constituents about the availability of vaccines. When will vaccines generally be available to my group, my age group, my healthcare status group, etc.? Again, you can find detailed information on readyslow.org. But from a positive standpoint, I thought I would take a moment to let you know not only what our own county will be doing, but where we are headed with the vaccine. The vaccines, as you know, are highly effective, 94.5% to 95%. The two companies that have been approved, Moderna and Pfizer, require two doses in order to obtain that level of immunity. They also appear to be effective so far against the mutant strains that are beginning to appear in California and across the country. That is good news. However, some of the treatment medications that are being used to treat active COVID cases are showing resistance to certain treatments that are used to help slow the virus once one has already acquired the virus itself. That is of significant concern, obviously. Right now, we are involved in administering vaccines to San Luis Obispo County Phase 1A. Again, there's an extensive list on the website that you can find. However, basically that involves healthcare practitioners, individuals like EMTs and paramedics that are on the front line, skilled nursing facility, assisted living facility, residents and staff, physicians' offices, chiropractic, ancillary health offices, pharmacists, pharmacy technicians, community pharmacy personnel, et cetera. In San Luis Obispo County, they are administering at present about 500 vaccines per day at a single clinic at the public health department. This, again, is reserved for the Phase 1A group, which includes a majority of those individuals or individual professional groups that I outlined. The next phase will include individuals 75 years or older, or individuals with significant comorbid or secondary health conditions. That phase is estimated to begin with regard to the administration of the vaccine in our county, hopefully late January or early February. With regard to the general population, the availability of the vaccine for administration to groups that are not high risk, such that I would consider it to be something like getting the flu vaccine, will probably not occur because of the unavailability of resources to administer and the unavailability of significant amounts of vaccine at the local level. Will probably not occur until the March to June time period. That's the estimate as of today. The county is moving to open up three pods. These pods will be similar to the existing pod that is being administered by the health department at the health department. It's very efficient, very effective. And as I said, they are doing about 500 vaccines a day. The issue primarily is the unavailability of enough vaccinators or inoculators. The county is attempting to increase the volunteer capacity of individuals that would be licensed and able to administer vaccines. In addition to that, the county is working with communities, and I consider to be Morro Bay to be one of the lead communities in this. And that is our chief, Fire Chief Knuckles, has put together a program whereby, if you recall, 2 weeks ago, we had a flu vaccination clinic, which was really a test clinic for COVID-19 administration that hopefully will allow us to engage a number of community volunteers that are licensed to inoculate or administer vaccines. That could provide a clinic locally that would be organized similar to what the county is doing. I'm very proud of our fire chief and the leadership role he has taken in the community, and I can't say enough about what I consider to be the importance of taking this significant public health issue down to the local level and being prepared locally with resources and the availability to do, quote unquote, our own thing. That will help us deliver a majority of vaccines, hopefully to community members that desire them. The vaccines have proven to be quite safe with minimal side effects and or problems. The vaccines, again, are extremely effective. One of the most effective vaccines of any vaccine we've ever had. And also, in order to get what is considered to be herd immunity, the general population needs to be vaccinated to the tune of about 70% in order to achieve that. And so one of the important things as a community that we will need to do is to get information out to our public, our community members, not only on the availability of these clinics and proactively trying to get our resource levels to a point where they will be adequate for us to administer our own in the community, but also get information out about the safety of these vaccines and the need for all community members to achieve or get the vaccine. I know this is a rather lengthy report, and I apologize for that. We are in the middle of the worst healthcare crisis that I have ever seen in my career. And we, unfortunately, will continue to see, in my opinion, increases in the number of cases if we do not achieve herd immunity through vaccines. Secondarily, I want to thank our community for adhering to the guidelines that have been set down by the state of California, the Department of Public Health, the CDC, as well as the San Luis Obispo County of Public Health. As you know, we are still under the shelter at home mandate. And I will tell you, I've been asked by a number of people, what's the main mode of transmission in Morro Bay? How are people acquiring COVID-19? What is it that we need to do to protect ourselves against this public health nightmare? I will tell you that the information is no different than it was several months ago. Gatherings of non-immediate family members that do not adhere to social distancing, that do not limit themselves to just two families, and do not limit themselves to appropriate mask wearing and frequent hand washing are the main issue or reasons COVID-19 is spreading. That is the gathering, especially in enclosed places, of individuals who are not members of the same household and do not adhere to strict standards of social distancing, mask wearing, frequent hand washing, etc. I implore you as a community, even though we are dealing with difficult times, difficult mental health issues due to the restrictions placed upon us, limited socialization, limited ability to get out, difficulty with regard to maintaining financial integrity of our homes due to loss of income, loss of jobs, loss of just sustenance in general, and the very suffering of our businesses in the community has been tremendous. But this is not the time to do anything other than to be strictly adherent and accountable to the guidelines that have been laid down, to pay attention to the information that will be communicated to you on a routine basis, and to please consider getting the vaccine when it becomes available to your community. I know this council and your city staff is absolutely sold out to making this happen for Morro Bay. This is our number one public health issue. Our desire is to protect you, to usher you back to health, and to enable you to receive all of the resources that you possibly can. I want to thank the Chamber for working with our businesses who have suffered greatly. Please shop locally according to guidelines established by the county and state. Please support your restaurants through takeout only ordering. Please support our small businesses and our businesses in the community to assist them in maintaining viability or a semblance of viability through this terrible pandemic. So thank you for taking the time to listen to me. There'll be more communications. Again, readyslow.org has significant information. You can get everything that I've just said there on a daily basis, all the numbers you've ever wanted, all the information with regard to vaccination administration, and also testing, which continues to occur in Morro Bay according to the existing schedule that you can find on the website, which is 3 days per week and will continue probably indefinitely until the pandemic is over. So thank you. Socially distance yourself. Wear masks at all times. Do not gather in groups greater than one other family unit outside of your immediate family. Frequent hand washing is imperative, and please adhere to the shelter at home order. Pay attention to the vaccine administration schedule that will be forthcoming. Thank you for that. Again, my apologies for the lengthy report, but I am so concerned about our community and your health that I thought it imperative to do that. With that, I will turn it over to our city manager, Mr. Collins, please.
Thank you, Mayor, Council members. Happy New Year, everyone, and the audience and watching. Just wanted to offer a few quick updates, trailing off what the mayor just said. Vaccinations are going to be a key, very key component to turning the tide on COVID-19, in addition to all the great work our community is doing to stay safe. The cities in SLO County and fire agencies are working closely with the county to provide assistance in terms of actually administering shots. Only certain types of job classifications can provide those at this time based on state and federal law or regulations. And so we are going to do our best to provide city staff, and other cities are stepping up to the plate to do that to help accelerate distribution of the vaccines. There will be a discussion with City Council because there likely is a budget impact to that, but we wanted to make sure the community was aware that we're all working together to move quickly on this opportunity. The city has closed its latest round of business or small business grants for those impacted by COVID-19. We've received, I believe, over $250,000 in requests for $50,000 that we have available. We're taking it to a committee for review probably next week, and hopefully have decisions by towards the end of this month of January. And I believe our community development director, Scott Graham, has a quick announcement as well.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Collins. Happy New Year to everyone. I have an announcement related to our upcoming Planning Commission meeting on the 19th. The county will be presenting project design for the Morro Bay to Cayucas Connector Trail. So that would be a 1 mile trail that between Morro Bay and Cayucas. It'll extend from Toro Lane to Studio Drive, parallel to Highway 1. The Planning Commission will be reviewing that on the, receiving that presentation from county staff on the 19th at 6 o'clock. We don't have any other items on the agenda. So that if you tune in, you'll get to see that and there won't be anything else in front of it. So you don't have to wait. The intent from the county is to receive public comments on the proposal. There's no action taken by the Planning Commission. It's simply a presentation and an opportunity for our community to provide input on the trail design. So please tune in next Tuesday. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. Anything else, sir? Thank you, Mr. Graham.
No, sir. Thank you. We can happy to answer any questions if you have any about the vaccination plan, but I think you covered it really well. Thanks.
Great. Thanks so much for that. Appreciate that. With that, I will move to general public comment. This is for items either on the agenda that you would like to comment about and or anything that you would like to speak to with regard to our city. If you're not able to stay for the meeting and would like to, again, comment on items on the agenda, now's the time to do that. The information with regard to how to access public comment is now on our screen. You'll have 3 minutes, and I'm happy to open up a general public comment. Anthony, do we have anybody in the queue, sir?
Yes, Mayor. I have 3 raised hands in the queue. I'm going to go ahead and unmute Michael Martz. Michael, you are unmuted and free to give your testimony, please.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor and City Council members, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you tonight. Again, my name is Michael Martz. And my family is the owner of a 45-acre property that wraps around the Casa de Flores assisted living facility. And along with the owner of the adjacent 5-acre undeveloped Seashell Estates parcel, we submitted a letter to you recently detailing our request for the city to include our 2 properties in the new general plan LCP document to be rezoned from its current zone of suburban residential to RM/PD. If these properties remain as currently zoned suburban residential, the housing product will be large lot, single family estate homes. And actually, larger expensive estate housing is currently in great demand due to the pandemic, as people in crowded cities are fleeing to the Central Coast. It is my opinion that Morro Bay does not need more large, expensive homes. In addition, the current type of zoning is not favorable to the inclusionary development of more affordable mixed housing types. And it would result in the city's failure to address the many goals identified in the city's recent housing element. I realize that this request is coming to you at a late hour, but fortunately, there is still ample time for the city to take advantage of this window of opportunity to ensure that these sites' general plan designation reflects the type of housing growth that the city needs, and that the city, that the citizens of Morro Bay would like to see moving forward into the next decade. In closing, it is our hope that you see this opportunity for the city's largest vacant parcel zoned residential to be developed in a way that is progressive and careful, and that you will direct the city staff to evaluate these 2 properties together for inclusion in the pending general plan LCP document. I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Michael. Anthony, a next public comment, please.
Yes, Mayor. The next speaker is Chris. Forgive me for last name, but Rudebush. I think I got it right. And you're go ahead and unmuted and free to give your testimony, please.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Greetings and Happy New Year from the We Are the Care Initiative. My name is Chris Rodebush. As we begin 2021, we are starting a new chapter for the initiative and are looking forward to reinvigoration of our work. This new stage has been inspired by the tenacity of our childcare professionals and the childcare field in our community in the face of COVID-19. The pandemic has affected childcare centers and family childcare homes detrimentally, but our childcare professionals continue to persevere and put the children and families of SLO County first. 13% of licensed programs are currently inactive or providing distance learning only due to COVID. A recent survey found programs are operating at 76% of licensed capacity as a result of group size limitations and underattendance. Programs in our community have been forced to drastically adjust their day-to-day operations, utilize funds from razor-thin budgets to purchase more cleaning products, and introduce even more stringent sanitation guidelines, all while staff are putting themselves and their families at risk each day. These programs are also a large part of our small business community, but they are often not recognized in the same light as our other small retailers, restaurants, or other local small businesses. Childcare is absolutely an essential service and is in need of our support. And We Are the Care is excited to announce multiple opportunities for you to get involved and help. First, a childcare supply drive is currently running through January 27th at all CESLOC branch locations. Please consider contributing gloves, disinfectant wipes, no contact thermometers, cloth masks, hand sanitizers, etc., to directly support local childcare providers. Second, the We Are the Care will be hosting a virtual 2021 New Year kickoff event on Thursday, January 21st from 6 to 7 p.m. Join us for an overview of the initiative and its four task forces, a celebration of our many We Are the Care wins from the past 20 months, and an update on the first phase of the countywide child care study. We value our community and hope to utilize as the many strengths of its members from every background. Thank you so much for your time. As always, we will be back soon with more updates. If you want to join us on January 21st to get involved with We Are the Care, please contact First 5 San Luis Obispo County or find more information on our website, www.first5slo.org. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Chris. Anthony, next public comment, please.
Yes, Mayor. Erica Crawford is the next one in line here. Your hand raised.
Welcome, Erica.
Thanks so much. Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. Thank you for the opportunity to provide the platform to communicate with you and with community members and business owners tuning in. And Mayor Heading and City Manager Collins, thank you for your comprehensive update on the COVID-19 vaccine rollout that you provided this evening. With the severe increase in COVID transmission over the last month that is continuing to worsen, and with no date certain on when our economy will be able to meaningfully or fully reopen, we are recommending that businesses take immediate steps to secure federal and state economic assistance. The Payroll Protection Program, or PPP, which is a program through the SBA and Department of the Treasury, but that is accessed through participating banks and other third-party qualified financial institutions, has been reopened this week, both for first-time applicants and for second draws. Businesses should navigate to the SBA's website, which is sba.gov, and/or contact their bookkeepers, their CPAs, and bank branch specialists at participating banks to apply. The California Small Business Grant Round 1 is set to close tomorrow at 11:59 p.m. Businesses should go to careliefgrant.com right away to submit applications. Again, that program's first round is set to close tomorrow at 11:59 p.m. For information about other SBA programs like the EIDL and Express Bridge Loans, businesses should go to the SBA website or contact the Cal Poly SBDC for direct assistance. That's sbdc.calpoly.edu. Nonprofits are also businesses and are also experiencing economic hardship at this time. The PPP is an option for some nonprofits, and the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo does have multiple grant programs that may assist our local nonprofit community. Most of these grants are due by this Friday, January the 15th. Their website is cfs CFLOCO.com. That's CommunityFoundationsLOCO.com. As ever, the Chamber is here to support anyone who needs information about these and other programs. We can be reached by phone at 772-4467 or our most responsive via email at this time at info@morochamber.org. And finally, for those who can, thank you for the shout out to Shop Local. Please do support your local businesses. And if you can't support them financially at this time, a simple thing like writing a positive review or a social media platform, thumbs up or a follow for them means quite a lot. We will get through this together. I think we simply must. Thanks very much. Happy New Year, everyone.
Thank you, Erica. Happy New Year to you as well. Anthony, next public comment, please.
Mayor, I do not see any left in the queue.
Bless you, Erica. Okay. With that, I will go ahead and close general public comment. That will move us to That will move us to item A, our consent agenda. Let me go ahead and open up public comment for our consent agenda. This is public comment for items on the consent agenda only. And Anthony, any public comments, sir?
Mayor Heading, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Thank you for that. With that, I will close a public comment for the consent agenda, bring it back to council, and either entertain a motion for approval and or if there are any items to pull, be happy to consider that.
I'll move to approve the consent agenda.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to pull A5.
Okay, thank you. I have a motion to approve consent agenda. Is there a second for that?
Robert Davis seconds.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second with the pulling of, you said A5, was that Councilmember Heller?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Addis, would you amend your motion to exclude item A5?
I will amend my motion to approve the consent agenda minus A5.
Thank you for that. And Council Member Davis?
Yes.
Thank you. So we have a motion by Council Member Ennis to approve items all but A5 and second by Council Member Davis. Any further discussion on those? If not, we'll entertain a roll call vote, please. Thank you.
Council Member Addis?
Yes.
Council Member Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you. Councilmember Heller, A5, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I have questions about AB 1600, and I don't know if Katie can answer these or Scott Collins or Scott Graham, but I just thought I would go down the list because I think it's an interesting source of revenue and what we can and cannot do with it. So I'm hoping to educate myself and the public at the same time. The public improvement projects, I'm curious, does the state mandate what percentages we have to allocate, or is that something that we have control over, if you understand what I mean?
Thank you for the opportunity to answer your questions, and I would like to invite either Mr. Leivick or Mr. Graham or possibly the city attorney to add to the answers or navigate me through this question. So my understanding is that the development impact fees are set by the council and they are not necessarily distributed to specific projects, but the projects have to be aligned with the particular development that paid the fees. And I'm happy for anybody of my colleagues that are more knowledgeable would like to add to that.
I guess in a nutshell, development impact fees offset the impact of new development and must be at least somewhat related and to that new development. For example, if you increase traffic into an intersection and it needs Not that Moa Bay will need another traffic signal for quite some time, and you need a new traffic signal, those traffic development impact fees would go to offset the costs of new development's impact in that intersection.
And if I believe it's the development's fair share of that impact.
Yes, it needs to be roughly proportional to their impact.
So that's a calculation that you would do for any project that comes forward?
It's the calculation has been done through the impact fee study, and it's either based on a square footage of the project or the amount of traffic they generate. Typically, for ease of implementation, it's based on a square footage. Water impact fees is based on a meter size, just to make the implementation simpler.
Okay, and then there's some language in the staff report that says you've got to ensure that the funds are spent in a timely manner. So is that tied to the progress of the project, or what does a timely manner mean? In other words, I guess what I'm wondering about is, can we accrue funds over, say, a five-year period for a larger project?
Yes, we can. By programming funds to a project or encumbering those funds, we may be able to accrue funds over even longer period for a project that we're trying to deliver in the future.
Okay, so that's something the council would decide during the budgeting process, I suppose, or?
Yes, so we would recommend a funding source for a project that may include development impact fees in the budget calculation and those capital budget sheets.
Okay, those are my questions. Thank you for taking a few minutes to explain that to me. I appreciate it. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Not a problem. Thank you for that clarification, and thank you, staff, for your response. Councilmember Hiller, would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I move we approve A5 and the consent agenda.
Second.
I second.
Motion by Councilmember Hiller to approve item A5, second by Councilmember Davis. Any further discussion? If not, we'll do a roll call vote, please. Madam Clerk?
I apologize. Councilmember Hiller?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Member Barton?
Yes.
And Mayor Heading?
Yes.
And carries 5-0.
Great. Thank you for that. That moves us to our public hearing. This is item B1. This is introduction and first reading of ordinance number 642. Reinstating and amending Moro Bay Municipal Code Chapter 13.12 to update and expand the city's sewer use ordinance. The public hearing process will involve a staff presentation first. Then we will go to council questions. I will then open up the public hearing and ask for public comment. After receipt of public comment, I will close the public hearing, bring it back to council for deliberation and a motion. So with that, let me turn it over to Mr. Leivick, it looks like.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm just going to do a brief introduction. This ordinance is really to protect our future water supply. So our water reclamation facility will be generating highly purified water that will be injected into the ground for later extraction. We need to ensure that water is as clean as possible and that we don't have contaminants going into our wastewater system that don't belong there. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Eric Caceres and Lydia Holmes from Corollo Engineers and the program management team to give a brief presentation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Mr. Mayor, members of council, good to see everybody. Happy New Year. Eric Caceres, the work program manager. We are coming to you again on this topic. We had a presentation that was given by somebody from our team back on November 17th, and we are now here to give the first reading. And so we have an abbreviated presentation that is going to be given by Lydia Holmes, who is our permitting lead for Corolo for the work project.
Great. Thanks, Eric. So hold on. I'm just trying to figure out if I'm sharing. Am I sharing?
You are.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Let me see if I can. All right. Okay. As Eric said, we're here to talk about the sewer use ordinance. And of course, everyone is well aware that the city is investing in the new water reclamation facility. And we previously discussed the sewer use ordinance at the workshop in November. Pretreatment and source control are required to protect this new facility and all the in uses. Like Rob talked about, it will be producing a potable supply, but it also produces water that has to go out the outfall. The new facility, of course, needs to be run well. So you don't want to have anything in the sewer that could impact the treatment functions of the new facility. So the current municipal code does not provide adequate legal authority. So we have updated the sewer use ordinance to give the city that legal authority. And we also have an enforcement response plan, which establishes procedures for noncompliance with the pretreatment requirements. So major changes to the sewer use ordinance are that it authorizes the city to issue wastewater discharge permits to industrial users, general users, and food facilities. It provides monitoring, reporting, and compliance requirements for industrial users, establishes the city's enforcement policies, establishes discharge limits for industrial users, and incorporates the city's existing fats, oils, and grease or fog program. We have parameters that in the sewer use ordinance that have discharge limits for industrial users. And there's a variety of reasons for the different constituents we have here, but it does represent protecting some of those different end uses that I talked about. So some of them are making sure that discharges to the wastewater treatment plant are within normal limits so that the wastewater treatment plant performs well. There are constituents like salinity, TDS, and sodium are good examples of that, which affect the advanced treatment process performance. There are metals like copper and mercury that can be toxic and cause problems with your discharge to the ocean. So we need to make sure those stay within low levels. And then there's some constituents that we might be concerned about if it passed through to your potable supply. So there are different reasons for different discharge limits and why we put them into the sewer use ordinance. And then the enforcement response plan that I mentioned earlier, this is an administrative tool for the utilities department, and the legal authority to implement it is in the new code, Chapter 1312. It summarizes types of enforcement that are available to the city to respond to pretreatment violations, responsibilities and processes, provides guidance and a roadmap to the city for appropriate and consistent enforcement remedies, and provides example forms and notices to carry out enforcement and inspection actions. We don't anticipate that the city is going to have to use this much, but you want to have it in place so that there are consistent measures and provide the city the authority if needed. So with that, the next steps are that the ordinance reading number 2 and adoption of the new ordinance will be on January 26th. All provisions of the sewer use ordinance will be effective immediately after adoption. And then the city will start developing discharge permits for their industrial users and businesses. The industries are going to be within the first year. And select businesses will be permitted gradually over the following 3 years. And that's about 178 restaurants. And that's mainly focusing on that fats, oils, and grease provision that we talked about. And then 33 commercial businesses. And implementation will involve outreach to industries, businesses, and residences. All right, and that's all we have.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes. I appreciate it. If you'll stand by, we're going to move to council questions. And with that, I will open it up for council questions. If we could start with Council Member Davis, sir, any questions?
No, sir, I do not have any questions.
Thank you. Council Member Heller, sir, any questions?
I do have a few, thank you.
You bet. So
apparently this program is required by the Regional Water Quality Control Board for any project where they're injecting treated water into the ground and pulling it back out. I think you estimated in the staff report the initial cost for the first year is $260,000 or so, and then maybe $100,000 less following years. Can you tell? Can you?
$245,000.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
Can you explain to me what that fund is used for? What exactly will we be paying for and getting for that money?
So I would have to go back and pull that up. But it's the initial year is higher than the subsequent years because you're setting up the program and starting the permitting process and getting all the templates in order. And there is sampling and monitoring. So there's staff time associated with that. Trying to think what else is in that. Eric, I don't know if you remember, but it and Joe, feel free to weigh in too.
Yeah, I think that it's split and I'm pulling up the exact split of the first year and subsequent years. But it's higher in the first year because there's purchasing of sampling equipment. And there's some additional staff time as Lydia mentioned for setting up the program. And then in subsequent years, the majority of the cost is related to staff time.
Eric, your staff report is $245,000 year one and $161,000 subsequent years. Just FYI.
Correct. Thank you.
And so that budget number includes the sampling that will be required?
That's correct.
Yeah, right. We made an estimate of staff time, equipment, lab costs. We tried to make an estimate of everything that would be included.
So that would include outreach, the sampling, any paperwork filing, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And so every project like ours, every IPR project in California, or maybe in the nation, I don't know, has to have this kind of a program regardless of the size or the volume of water that is being treated. Is that correct?
So pre-treatment programs are required for any facility that is larger than 5 MGD. And then the state also has required that potable reuse projects implement pre-treatment and source control programs. And so, yes, you're correct. There's two different triggers. One would be if you're large enough, and then another would be if you're implementing potable reuse. And the thought process is that you want to make sure that you're protecting your treatment process so that you maintain high quality for all the different end uses.
Okay, so this is ongoing. As long as we do IPR work, we'll be needing to have this program in place and implement it annually. Is that correct?
Yes, there's going to be provisions that will carry through and require annual. That's what the 165 or whatever is. It's an annual cost.
Okay, those are my questions. Thank you very much.
Oops, thank you, Councilmember Hiller. I couldn't get my mic to come on. Sorry about that. Appreciate that. Councilmember Addis, questions?
I don't have any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember, Barton. Councilmember Barton, sorry.
I don't have any questions. I was just pleased to see the report and know that we are moving along smoothly to get everything to come together for the completion of the plan. And so it was very interesting and educational to see all this and see the back part of it, the many different sections that all go together. So I was pleased to see it.
Great. Thank you for that. A couple of questions for either Lydia or Eric. with regard to the potential offset through the collection of permit fees, do we have a sense of what percent of the ongoing program costs might be offset by those fees?
We haven't started that discussion about what permit fees would be charged, and so I don't really have a good sense of that right now. Sorry.
Yeah, we haven't had those detailed discussions about the actual permit fee. This is going to be the cost for the implementation, and the permitting fee component hasn't been determined.
And do you have a sense of potentially the number of businesses in Morro Bay that might be subject to the fee?
We have a couple of more significant industrial users that we paid a particular attention to because of the type of discharge. So there's two of those businesses that we have we've identified and we've discussed, and then there's also the restaurants are also ones that would be involved in this program.
You're cutting out, Eric. Couldn't hear you.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say there's two in particular that we're looking at for, let's say, because of the salinity discharge or the saltiness of the discharge they have. And then restaurants are also ones that would potentially be covered under this.
Okay. So for those significant maybe two businesses, do we have a sense of the magnitude of the impact on their operations and I know you've engaged with those businesses, but are we talking about, major hits to these entities?
We're working closely with one in particular that could potentially have the largest impact, and trying to figure out ways to make all the parties involved or to best suit all the parties involved in terms of being most protective of the treatment plant itself, the collection system, and the future potable water supply, but then obviously being conscientious to the business and not saddling them with too many costs or requirements. And so that is currently ongoing, those discussions with that particular business.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. That's all the questions I have. With that, I will go ahead and open up the public hearing and open up public comment. This is public comment for item B-1. And Anthony, do we have any public comments, sir?
Mayor, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Having no public comment, I will go ahead and close public comment. Close the public hearing and bring it back to council for, I'll entertain a motion if you are so inclined.
Can we comment here first?
Absolutely. Comment or motion, whichever you'd like. Absolutely.
Okay. I just like to make a comment. I mean, obviously, putting water to the ground and pulling it back out and treating it so it can be used as drinking water is a big deal and has to be handled properly. And I think modifying our municipal code to comply with these requirements is absolutely the right thing to do. Frankly, I'm not quite comfortable with the budget amounts because I don't really understand the scope of the work. And I'm wondering if that can perhaps be bid out to different proposers or if we need to look at that. But I think we definitely need to modify the municipal code. And I support the agenda item on that basis.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Did you want to make a motion to that effect?
I will make a motion for approval, item B1.
Great.
Okay. Have a motion. I'll second.
Okay. A motion by Councilmember Heller for introducing the first reading by number and title only, with further reading waived of ordinance number 642, restating and amending chapter 13.12 of the Morro Bay Muni Code to update and expand the city's sewer regulations. Second by, I think I heard Councilmember Addis got in the wire. And with that, any further comments or discussion? I will just agree with Councilmember Heller. I appreciate that comment with regard to cost. I'm interested in obviously getting future reports about the impact, especially on the two businesses that will be most significantly impacted by this, so that we're aware of those impacts and also potentially any impacts on smaller businesses, such as restaurants, et cetera, just to get a further understanding of the fees. And I know those fees will be coming back to us. So with that, if there are no other comments, we'll do a roll call vote.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Great. Thank you for that. That concludes item B-1. That moves us to item C, our business items. First is item C-1. City Council Goals and Objectives Update and Proposed Delay to the 2021-2022 Goal Setting Process. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Collins, please.
Thank you, Mayor. Council members, I'm going to share my screen, so 1 second. Let's see if this works. Can you see my PowerPoint, Mayor?
You bet.
Yeah, okay, great. Okay, well, thank you. Wanted to give a brief update on the progress that the city has made towards achieving the goals and action items for calendar year 2019 and 2020, and briefly talk about what that process looks like and how we got to where we are, and then also talk about staff's recommendation to delay initiation for the next 2-year cycle due to COVID-19 issues. So there you go, the agenda. As council probably recalls, or at least most of you recall, in 2019, early in the year, following the election, we embarked on a community outreach effort to get community input about the existing goals, if we were missing anything with those goals, and how we might achieve those, using a new tool that we've had a couple of years of experience with, POLCO, as well as more traditional engagement efforts like a community forum and the like. And got a lot of participation over a couple hundred folks were able to elicit their opinion or provide their opinion, and the city council took that into consideration and did modify a couple of the goals, particularly around affordable housing. So as it stands now, council has made achieving economic and fiscal sustainability the number one goal. And we have improving infrastructure, public spaces, completing our land use plans for the future, as well as addressing affordable housing, and then improving communication and community engagement were the four goals established for 19 and 20. And there were approximately 26 action items related to those. Those are the initiatives that council wanted us to embark upon to help achieve those goals. And we've been providing, as the best we can, quarterly updates to council on what we're doing on those specific action items. So I'm briefly going to talk about it, and it's in the report and the attachment, but go through the where we're at with those 26 items. We've completed approximately 8 of those, including the enhancement review of revenues, which led to Measure E, which was successfully passed. In trying to extend our efforts in economic development, council requested that we elicit services from the chamber to serve as our ombudsman for economic development. We're in our second fiscal year of that service with the chamber, and they're doing a great job. Council asked for us to revise our short-term vacation rental policy. We completed that after a lengthy community committee process, planning commission, and TBID review, and ultimately approval by council. That's now on its way to Coastal Commission. We added the short-term vacation rentals into the Tourism Business Improvement District. We revised the partnership policy that helps partner with nonprofit organizations to carry out functions the city otherwise wouldn't be able to do on its own, or they can do it more efficiently. We reviewed our CalPERS liabilities last year and made additional reforms to our approach to CalPERS. Council considered local labor for components of the wharf, and included language in the pipeline component of the project, and assuming we do the same for the injection well component of the construction, and added adult use to the cannabis for retail in our city. So those are the 8 that are completed. The next slide is the action items where we've made significant progress, but not quite done. The first is a fee study. We've looked at virtually all of our fees, and council has taken action on almost 90% of those. We still have the impact fees to bring forward, which was discussed earlier in consent. Council adopted new waterfront lease policies, and the next stage of that is implementation. And staff, though we've been hampered by COVID-19 and just, you know, filling holes where we're able to maintain existing services, but are trying to figure out a way to best analyze different options for how to provide lease management services moving forward. We know that was a big topic of discussion during the Harbor Advisory Board opening discussion earlier this afternoon. Planning staff and consultants are working very hard to complete the general plan, local coastal plan update. It's gone through the planning commission. The EIR is slated for review. Then it would move on to city council early this year or in spring, and then on to coastal commission, and the zoning code will begin that process after it's moved through the various bodies. Waterfront implementation was a standalone goal at one point, and now it's just rolled into public infrastructure. We have acquired or secured a WIFIA line of credit for $62 million. Wharf site is under construction, pipeline contracts awarded. City is in the process of completing the SRF loan processing, and there's a lot of other efforts underway regarding implementation of the wharf, and we're on timeline to meet our time schedule order by the state for 2023. Planning has embarked on efforts with SLO County and other cities to combine efforts around the housing element and implementation of the housing element, seeking grants to work together to help address what is probably our biggest issue outside of COVID. Council wanted us to implement 1 water CIP projects. 3 projects are under design, and I don't know exactly where we are, but I think we're getting closer to 30% design on those 3 projects. Council approved us moving forward, taking the great work of the chamber on stakeholder input on our permitting process, and now we're in the early stages of reviewing our process internally and working with an ad hoc group, which we're hoping to launch later this month. And the parking management plan, we have a consultant on board who did 2 data inputs or data collection exercises, once in the summer, once in the off season, and hopefully we'll be able to present the next round of data analysis and recommendations to council in a couple months, we're hoping. And then we have several items that are either just strictly kind of an ongoing thing or just haven't had time to get around to, or not a lot of development around. Market Street Plaza development is still a question mark, and it's a challenge right now with there's not a lot of lending going on for hotel development with the tourism industry being impacted by COVID. Offshore wind farm development will probably pick up the pace with the new administration at the federal level. High-speed internet, we haven't had an opportunity to really go into depth on that, mainly from a staff capacity and financial issues. And then Chamber has been helping, as well as Reach, the SLO County and Santa Barbara kind of economic group, to bring potential investments into our community, but no major information presented this time. The winter shelter idea hasn't gained much ground. I think the county is looking to fund more permanent solutions to homelessness, and we're in discussions with Los Osos about some different options, but nothing concrete at this time to report. Co-working space, much like the high-speed internet, just haven't had time to get around to that. The grant for Boatyard feasibility study, not much work has been done on that. I will continue to coordinate with nonprofit groups now that we have a new partnership policy in place. So that's where we're at with those 26 action items. And we also have these set of items that have come forward through future agenda direction from the council to review safe and sane fireworks ordinances, look at our city noise ordinance, review requirements for Senate Bill 1383 that's related to waste management and enforcement, review city events policy, review city council compensation and local campaign contribution limits, provide a report on the city's process to determine whether we need to implement four-way stops in certain areas. We need to provide a report on the city's street sweeping performance and options, and then consider firearm safety regulation options as well. So that is sort of a quick update, and happy to answer any questions if you have anything on that. But as far as the next two-year process is concerned, you know, typically we'd be embarking on an outreach program in January and February, and then host a community forum or a series of forums in March. And then the last step is city council reviewing and adopting the goals or affirming the existing goals and action items in April, so that we kind of can connect those to the next budget process. However, given the significant impacts of COVID-19, the fact that staff is spending an exorbitant amount of time in addressing a once-in-a-lifetime pandemic and public health emergency, we simply don't have the resources either from a staff side or budget side to think about the next round of initiatives when we're struggling to keep up with what we already have in place. So we would recommend delaying that tentatively till May. Of course, if COVID conditions worsen, we may have to look at pushing that out a bit further, but we're hopeful with the vaccinations and the like that May would be a good time to start thinking about the future. And so I just wanted to put that out there, staff. You know, we certainly don't like being the one to say no, but we think this is prudent given that most of our resources are being applied to the most important community issue at this present time, which is, you know, keeping the public informed, keeping the public safe, and preparing for a return to our normal through vaccinations and other efforts to combat COVID-19. So again, we would recommend delaying the goal setting process until May, and tentatively, of course, if conditions worsen. We also are seeking direction to bring back to council, the next council meeting, the budget and council meeting dates to correspond with this delay if council is so inclined. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Great, Scott, thank you. Thanks for the presentation summary and the comprehensive review of goals progress and the staff report. We do appreciate that very much. Very thoughtful. And with that, I'm going to open it up for questions and ask if Councilmember Addis, if you have questions.
I don't have so many questions. Thank you to staff. I feel like we've made a ton of progress, and to my colleagues on council who have helped us move many of these things forward as well. I do have comments and suggestions.
Okay.
When we get to that piece.
We'll take those. I'm going to go through questions first, and then we'll hit the comments. Great. Councilmember Davis, questions?
Yes. Scott, do we not have de facto goals related to COVID recovery that we are pursuing as a city?
Yes, sir. We haven't called them as such, but yeah, we have the best platform or framework I can think of is we're under emergency, and we have our emergency operations center going and have had it going since March. We create an IAP, which is just an action item or action plan to address the myriad of issues, which sort of fall into several buckets, you know, public information, the public health piece, assisting our business community. There may be some other categories, but yeah, that's our template to ensure that we're reflecting back on what's really important to our community. And we refine those every couple of weeks, and really appreciate the work of Chief Knuckles and Chief Cox is helping to lead that up with him, and every pretty much the entire city staff have been working it in some capacity.
Okay, I guess I just hate to present the appearance that we're just kind of dealing with things on a day-to-day as they come up. And I wonder if it wouldn't make sense to define and codify the goals that we are pursuing on a daily basis as city goals in some sort of a process.
Yeah, I definitely could pull that together. It makes sense. Like I said, we have those already written out as part of our biweekly or bimonthly update for the Emergency Operations Center. And so, I mean, it is what we're doing. So it is a reflection of where your staff is spending time. So it wouldn't be that hard to pull that together and potentially make sure we're not missing anything by asking our community for input.
Okay, that's all the questions I have. Thank you very much for what you and your staff have heroically accomplished during this past year.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Davis. Councilmember Heller, sir, do you have questions?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, I want to acknowledge that I figured out how to do the raise hand function on Zoom. So, you know, not that anyone will recognize it, but I'm just proud of myself. So a little self-acknowledgement. One step at a time. So if the council wanted to, is there any reason we couldn't postpone goal setting for another year or perhaps 2 years? And let me tell you why I asked that. I really like our four goals. And when you see the list that Scott has presented, it's quite phenomenal what we've accomplished. I think staff and council and the community and the advisory committees. But we still have some things to do under these four goals. And I look at those things to do and I say, there's a couple of years of work right there. And when you look at how much time we have to do perhaps more important things than goal setting processes, which frankly, when we ask the community, we get the same thing back year after year after year. I think we've got a great structure with these four goals, if I may say so, and I think we should postpone goal setting for 2 years. There's my question morphed into a comment. Sorry.
Yes, great question, Councilmember Heller, and yeah, absolutely. It's a policy, you know, the framework is developed by council, it's set in a resolution, but, you know, certainly could be amended to delay for a couple of years or a year or whatever. Whatever is the pleasure of the council, and certainly understand what you're saying. There is a lot of work left to do. And I think usually we sort of view this as a 2 year and a 4 year window. The 2 year is sort of the check-in to make sure, you know, the action items are making progress. Is anything that sort of flaring up in different areas we want to address? And then the 4 year following a presidential is sort of looking at the goals. Are we completely missing the mark, or has things changed so much that we have to shift goal gears? And I think COVID is sort of doing that on its own, right? So, and we have as an organization led by city council and staff following is that we need to shift, and we have done that.
Okay, thank you, Scott. Mm-hmm. Those are my questions.
Really, you bet. Thank you. And Council Member Barton, please, questions.
I more of a comment. I'm thinking that the goals as they are stated here, the four goals, almost anything that we would come up with would fit under those. So I'm agreeing with Jeff that there may be the possibility of perhaps pulling back for a year. There's just so much going on. This is a really impressive list and statement of the state of these different goals. I'm very impressed. This is a small city and we have a small staff. This is pretty amazing. So it's good to see.
Great. Thank you. And I have no questions. So that will just go ahead and take us to discussion or comments or recommendation. Councilmember Addis, you want to start us off?
I'm sorry, Mayor, do you want to do public comment?
Yes, I should do public comment, huh? It's been such a long time since we've had a meeting. I apologize for that. So let me go ahead and open up public comment. This is agenda item C-1. any member of the public wishing to comment on this item, please do so now. Anthony?
Mayor, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay. So wait a second. Seeing no hands raised, no public comment, I will close public comment and go ahead and bring it back. And Councilmember Addis, you want to start us off with discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I want to recognize how much staff is doing and how much council has done and the movement that we have made. But I also think it's important to think about the letter that the chamber sent and what the goals process is and the importance of community input. And I'm uncomfortable with the idea that council would suspend the goals. And I'm wondering if we can find a middle ground of doing an interim goal, which would really focus on COVID recovery and allow us to gather more public input to make sure that we're aware of all of the needs in our community. I think under COVID recovery, we could just make it very simple, focused on two areas, economic recovery as well as public health. There was a large discussion at the beginning of this meeting about public health, about possible vaccination programs, about pods. There's still a lot of work to do, and we did get some community input from residents back toward the beginning of COVID. The chamber has done a lot to get input from the business community, but I think it's important that we continue to reach out and get that kind of input. And I also think it's important that, to Councilmember Davis's point, we don't appear that we just are not doing anything with our goals. Other cities are, you know, going through the COVID crisis and they are updating and going through their goals process. And I think we're working really hard and the goals process can demonstrate that, but also allow our community to give more input on what's needed during COVID. And so that I would propose that we do an interim goal and come back, you know, do an interim goal around COVID recovery, gather public input through POLCO, even if it's using the last POLCO survey as a baseline and redoing similar questions, possibly a, you know, one meeting, and then come back in May and check in to see, are we ready for the robust process or do we need to stick with this, you know, a COVID recovery? I think I would all, I just also want to add that, you know, the situation with COVID has changed and changed again and changed again. And where we're at now is very different for people. And if there's not some rent relief and mortgage relief at the state level, we're going to have a very different situation again. And it's important that we continue to get that input to know what our businesses and our residents need.
Great. Thank you for those comments. I appreciate that. Councilmember Davis, comments?
I just want to echo and endorse Councilmember Addis's comments. I think that it is brilliant for us to embrace the efforts that we are making to deal with COVID on a daily basis and also to plan our economic recovery as we move forward away from the pandemic.
Great, thank you, appreciate that. Councilmember Heller, comment?
So my comments, with all due respect to what's been said, we are in a very stressed situation. In my mind, it's very clear what the goals are for this city, for our businesses. It's a small town. We know what people want. We know what businesses need and what they want. And I'm resistant to spending a lot of time setting goals and having meetings and getting community input, which is all well and good, when I think most of us know, if we had to say right now what this city needs economically and from a health standpoint, we would all pretty much come up with the same answer. So, I really think that we could add some action items under the existing structure of the four goals that we have in place already. I'm just trying to reduce the amount of time that we put in with the process, when it seems to me there are far more important things that need to get done today that we know about with respect to COVID and economic recovery. So,
great. Thank you. Appreciate those comments. Council Member Barton, please, comments?
Oh, I, having listened to this further discussion, I would agree that there needs to be a focus on COVID recovery and maybe the specifics of that to help us stay focused. Even though every day is a new day with COVID and that we're constantly thinking about it, it would not be a bad thing, I don't think, to add a goal that has to do with the recovery and then be able to kind of track it like these are the significant progress has been made, that. So that's, I would agree with the conversation.
Got it. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. My comments are, first, let me acknowledge the chamber input. I do appreciate that and the intent of that in terms of potentially new revenues being available and a new council and continuing on with adjusting and setting goals for the future. I'll make several comments being, as most of you are, internally involved with staff almost on a daily basis myself. I from an inside-out perspective, I will tell you right now that we are constrained with regard to interim resources, and I don't mean that negatively with regard to the individuals, but we have major challenges in the finance department, given the fact that we do not have a seated full-time recruited finance director. I believe Ms. Lichtig is doing an excellent job. However, I do know that there is a learning curve there for an individual that specifically is not a focused finance person. And again, no disrespect whatsoever, but that leaves us constrained with regard to the ability to do, I think, significant financial planning. In public works, we're having staffing changes occur on a major project with regard to our lead, and the lack of a lead individual in the public works department. That concerns me significantly. We're about to embark on a major planning process review that is going to be very significant, that was suggested by the council and will, I think, take a significant amount of staff time to move that initiative forward. And so I do see constraints internally with regard to resources to go through a full-blown planning process. My comments up front, and I think I heard concurrence across the board, this pandemic is going to get worse. And I can tell you, you can quote me, it is going to get worse. And prime goal number one, as I heard stated, and I absolutely agree with, is what do we need to do to protect our public and maximize the response to the pandemic? It's not going to happen at the state level. It's not going to happen at the county level for us. And we're going to need to allocate resources to make this thing happen and to get our population ready and immunized in order to get businesses back to work, in order to protect people long-term and to continue to message people with regard to that. So I'm very supportive of a refocused goal, as I think was stated, on what we need to do from a resource standpoint. It will cost probably money from the city in order to make this happen, that otherwise we're going to be at the mercy of the county and or the state, and as good a job as I think they do, they can't do it as well as I believe we can internally with their assistance. And that is a major area of focus. The third thing is, in the midst of a pandemic, I want to engage the public, but it will not be as robust as it has been in the past. And I'm concerned about that. I wouldn't mind beginning a process of a poll co input with regard to trying to ascertain what the public would like us to do. I do agree with Councilmember Heller. We kind of know because we've done some recent polling, but it's not going to be robust like it has been when we have community meetings where we get a large number of people showing up that give us significant input. So I'm concerned about embarking fully on the planning process with the lack of a robust public comment, public engagement process, but would very much support the beginning of some online, processes to determine what the needs are. From a budget standpoint, we are entering into labor negotiations, which again will constrain staff time significantly from all three bargaining units, again limiting our resources available for a major planning initiative. And lastly, for me, when I look at the comment about Measure E20 and the availability of revenues, remember that we have significantly depleted our reserves. And I believe we will have discussions significantly about the availability of new funds and the need to get that cushion back should there be a third surge of this pandemic or ongoing financial issues. Should there not be state or federal aid, which we have yet to see with regard to reimbursement to cities, and that concerns me greatly. So to go through a robust process of determining new allocations for spending without replenishing our reserves really concerns me. So for all of that, I think I'm landing with the majority of you in suggesting that staff, perhaps we could do a beginning outreach through either POLCO or what have you to get community input. And then perhaps as we get further resources in key positions like finance, public works, move our planning process forward, et cetera, we might be in a better position to really significantly examine goals. And the last thing I will say is not this quarter, but I believe the next fiscal quarter is going to be disastrous for the city, worse than the March, April, May, June time period, which isn't a quarter, but it would be the April, May, June time period when the pandemic first hit. We had a significant recovery in July, August, and September. As of now, September, October, November will probably look good, but thereafter, it's going to be worse, in my opinion, than it was in the beginning of the pandemic. And so I'm very concerned about finances going forward and being able to appropriately manage a new budget. So that's a lot of stuff, but all that said internally, I think what I hear is alignment to move a process forward for doing as much community input through either POLCO or what have you to begin that process, but also to redefine the goal around the pandemic and the pandemic response to protect public health and what resources might be necessary to allocate to make that happen. And I see heads nodding, I think, across the board. Is that?
I would just add public health and economic recovery.
And economic recovery. Yes, yes.
As we centered on those two big broad buckets. And I do think to Councilmember Barton and Heller's points, I do think a lot of what's already in the goals aligns well with economic recovery and public health, to be honest. When we think about housing, I think of housing as a public health, what will become a public health crisis if there's not rent and mortgage relief. Housing is going to grow to be a public health crisis even more than it is in Morro Bay.
I agree. So I'm kind of hearing, and I'm moving towards maybe a general recommendation that we begin the process of, I'll make this a motion, begin the process of obtaining input through POLCO, et cetera, on potential future community goals. And then secondarily, that we add a major initiative that focuses on public health response locally to the pandemic and resource allocation necessary for that, and then continue on with our existing goals, perhaps come back and, well, the issue of the preparedness for COVID-19, I think, needs to come back within 30 days. We need to get moving. And so I would add that to my motion, that we come back with that a recommendation in 30 days, and that staff come back and report on a community engagement process that they think appropriate right now during the pandemic. Does that make sense, or did I ramble that too much for you guys?
I'll second, but I would like to ask for a friendly amendment.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead.
If you would consider adding and economic recovery as well as a timeline of touching in May to see if we're ready for a more robust goals process. I think the timeline put forward was to push the goals to May so that we make sure to check in then.
I would absolutely support that friendly amendment.
And so I'll second.
Okay, so there is a motion on the table by Mayor Hedding, as stated, seconded by Council Member Addis with the friendly amendment or addendum. And I'll ask if that's clear or there's further communication or discussion, and also include staff. Are you clear on the recommendation?
If I may, I think easier if we just focus the outreach now on COVID and then in May, if we're at the appropriate place, then to talk about future. Maybe confusing if we're doing both at the same time. That would be my only concern. But I think I understand the rest of it. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay. Other comments?
Yeah, if I may, Mr. Mayor.
Sure.
No, I think we are, whether we make it a goal or not, completely focused on COVID, the financial impacts and the health impacts. Do we need to make this a goal? I mean, that's what we're doing. If it is going to help us to make it a goal and get more input from the community, great. But I mean, that's what we're doing, and maybe we should just state it and say everything else falls behind this. But I'm just not sure what the purpose of that is, to be frank.
So, yeah, let me be clear, and I apologize that I wasn't as clear as I should have been. The goal specifically would be within 30 days come back with a plan to protect public health that would involve the things that I outlined initially, not only a communication plan, but a localized plan for immunization of our own community and basically the costs associated with that. I believe the key to getting out of this pandemic is vaccination of as much of our population as possible. And that's the piece, Councilmember Hiller, that in my mind is missing. It's just that piece only, really. We're doing everything else. You're absolutely correct. I believe we have a framework established by our fire chief for readiness, but there need to be resources allocated, either voluntary or staff, to make this happen. And we need to get organized to be able to administer the vaccines when they come, rather than wait for the county and or state to make it happen.
Okay, yeah.
The other part was just beginning a process through online poll questions to be used later in a more robust goal setting process, but to begin just asking the community about priorities as we have in the past.
Okay, well, I appreciate your comments about vaccination and making that a front burner item, which I agree with 100%, and a poll exercise for other comment from the community seems to make sense to me. So thank you for that clarification. I'm good with the friendly amendment.
Okay.
Would you be open to another friendly amendment?
It depends how friendly it is.
Go ahead.
I'm wondering if we can hone this in so it's just an interim goal focused on COVID, that the outreach would be focused on COVID, both, you know, the health aspect and the economic recovery aspect, keep that, you know, as an interim goal with a touch point in May to see if we're ready to do that robust process. Because if we ask folks now about what they want in the future, I just don't know what that future looks like. I'd rather ask them in the future, you know, when we're at that point, what they want, if that makes sense.
I like that friendly amendment to your own friendly amendment.
So the amendment of the amendment is acceptable to the motion maker, and I would revise my motion to, I'll withdraw my motion and restate it. How's that? Would you allow that to be withdrawn? Okay. And Mr. Yeah. Collins, I want to be clear again, your comment about, I wanted to capture that as well.
Yes, sir. I think the friendly does and makes friendly perfect does. Sense to 30 days. We'll come back with the goals and input from the community.
So I'll move that we delay the major goal setting review process as recommended by staff. Number one, number two, that we ask staff to come back in 30 days with a focused goal to protect public health and address the COVID-19 issue. And that third, we engage the community in obtaining feedback with regard to that specific issue and postpone any other goal setting activities until a later date. Does that capture it, Don?
Public health and economic recovery related to COVID.
Keep forgetting to say that, yes.
Second.
Okay. So a motion by myself, as stated, second by Councilmember Heller, with head nods by Councilmember Addis. Any further discussion? Scott, are you good with that?
No, but I just, yeah, and thank you to staff for being willing to do this. I know it's a heavy load, but I think our community, I do think our community deserves to have some kind of process and input, and I think this is a good step. And I don't know if we need it in the motion that will come back in May, or if we can just understand that timeline.
Yeah, I'm understanding that.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. Yeah, all understood. I think what we'll do is we've got to bring back the budget and council meeting calendar next council meeting. We'll probably just put in tentative dates for restarting the outreach. But, of course, that'll all be tentative based on COVID conditions. So.
And I want to recognize Councilmember Barton's comments about we got a lot going on. And for a small city, it's already a full plate or very – large plate of very important issues that we continue to work on. And so noted, and thank you, Councilmember Barton, for bringing that up. With that, if there's no further discussion, I'll ask for a roll call vote, please.
Mayor Heading?
Yes.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Member Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
And Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you for that great discussion. And that brings us to business item C-2, consideration of proposal and approval of contract with Cogstone Resource Management Incorporated for archaeological and paleontological monitoring services for the water reclamation facility, lift stations, and offset pipelines construction. And I will turn it over to Mr. Livick and I believe Mr. Casares.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wanted to take 1 second. We had a number of questions the item B, and I wanted to direct everybody. I was having some technical difficulties to the enhanced source control program that was attached to that item, Appendix F. We'll give a very, very detailed breakdown of the costs associated with the first year of operation and subsequent years. So I just wanted to get that out there. It is something that is linked to that item and wasn't attached. It has to be downloaded from the city's website because it's a large document. So I just wanted to throw that out there because I was having problems with my computer during that item.
Thank you for that clarification, Eric.
Thank you. So thank you again for having me here to present again. We don't have a presentation on this item or the next item, but staff recommends the City Council receive. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm reading the wrong item. More technical difficulties. I'm rusty as well. It's been a while since we've had a meeting.
C2.
So real quickly, staff recommends the City Council review the attached staff report and proposal and review the recommendation from staff to award a contract to Cogstone for archaeological and paleontological monitoring services for the lift station and offsite pipelines component of the WRF, and recommend the City Council authorize the city manager to execute an agreement in an amount not to exceed $264,918. So I'll just walk through the staff report here quickly and then can answer any questions. Just at the top end, this is something that we've always anticipated would need to be done for this component of the project. We provided archaeological, paleontological, and tribal monitoring services for the construction of the water reclamation facility. Those services pretty much concluded as of last Friday, as we've nearly completed all of the earthwork at the water reclamation facility site. And these services would cover the construction of the pipelines and the pump stations. Our project archaeologist, Far Western, prepared a monitoring plan for the water reclamation facility, and they also prepared a monitoring plan for the lift stations and the pipelines. Those monitoring plans, per our agreement with the State Historic Preservation Office, were reviewed and approved, and they require monitoring as discussed in the staff report. The majority of the cost of this item is associated with the tribal monitoring. So kind of unlike the water reclamation facility, where pretty much all of the earth-disturbing activities were monitored by an archaeologist and a tribal representative, our monitoring plan that's been reviewed and approved has very minimal archaeological monitoring and much more tribal monitoring. So essentially the whole pipeline route and construction of the pump stations will be monitored by the tribal monitors. And the archaeologist will only be monitoring select sites based on investigations that we've done in and around the pipeline route previously in 2020. As is mentioned in the fiscal impact section, the contract value is roughly $265,000. The last budget update that we brought to council back in would have been in November of 2020, reflected the time period through September 2020. We had $550,000 budgeted for the archaeological and Native American monitoring. So if you compare the $265,000 that we're asking council to approve tonight to the $550,000, we've got some allowance there in that budget item as it currently sits in the budget. And that's not just for a fiscal year. That is for the duration of the project. So we asked the proposers to assume a duration of the project and assume a number of hours for the tribal monitors and other activities, and that is based on that $265,000 is based on our assumption for the entire project. This what we're asking you to approve tonight is the culmination of a process that started back on October 8th. The city released an RFP RFQ for these services. We received a total of four proposals. And we are asking the city to approve a contract with Cogstone based on our evaluation of those proposals. The proposals were due on October, it says 20th, it should be October 30th, 2020. We received four proposals from Cogstone, E-Corp, Albion, and Paleo West. We evaluated those proposals based on a number of criteria, understanding of the scope of work, past performance and related experience of the firm, expertise of the technical team members, their approach to the project, recent experience, cost effectiveness of their proposal, and ability to conform to the contract requirements that the city has in their standard contract. The proposals were reviewed by myself, Mr. Leibich, and Mr. Miller, and Cogstone was selected based on that review. Just to note, Cogstone is currently working with the Philance Black and Beach team for monitoring the work of the work site, performing a very similar function as they will be for this section of the work. And again, they were contracted with Philance Black and Beach, and that contract is ending. In conclusion, staff recommends award of the contract for archaeological and paleontological monitoring services for the lift station and offsite pipelines to Cogstone based on the solicitation process that we've discussed and has taken place since October of the previous year. And with that, I can entertain any questions.
Thank you, Eric. Very much appreciated. And thank you, Rob, for your participation in the staff report. Let me open it up for council questions. Council Member Barton, do you have questions?
No, I don't have questions. I was pleased to see the depth of the proposal and interesting to see that it's a woman-owned business. It's just another process for this work. I think it's good that we have this process because, as they pointed out, this is an area full of previous occupation by different groups of people. And so it would be important to know that and to deal with anything that might get dug up. So anyway, I was impressed with the quality of the proposal.
Great. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. Council Member Heller, sir, questions?
Yes, I have a question or two. Mm-hmm. And if I'm asking a question that's been asked or discussed, I apologize. I did have a quick biological break, which had to be taken care of.
Good.
So the paleontological monitoring service, that's basically tribal monitoring. Is that what we're talking about there, Eric?
There's really three separate elements. There is the archaeologists were required by our work with the State Historic Preservation Office to have a registered archaeologist on the project. The paleontological is actually dinosaur bones, those kinds of things, fossils, I should say. Then the third component of this is the tribal monitoring. So Cogstone's approach is they have monitors that are approved to serve both the archaeological and paleontological function. So rather than have two separate monitors for those activities, they're using a single monitor, again, which helps with the cost effectiveness. And then I should have mentioned in the discussion of the staff report that there are three tribes in the area that have expressed interest and we've been consulting with for a number of years to participate on this part of the project. So the direction that we decided to take is we directed all proposers, all archaeological firms that wanted to propose on this, that they had to subcontract with all three of the tribes that are interested in participating in this portion of the project. And then the archaeologist is responsible for coordinating the activities of the tribes. So all tribes will have the ability to participate on the project equally, and there'll only be one monitor at a time. So one group may be monitoring for 2 weeks, and then another group monitors for 2 weeks, and then another group, and then it starts over. But that'll be at the discretion of the archaeologist, but they have been directed to keep that among the three tribes.
Okay, thank you for that. I've received some questions about cultural site CA-SLO-16, which I have no idea where that is, but you probably know where it is. And the question I got was that it appears to be excluded from the scope of the work of the contract that we're considering for this item, but that it's addressed in the EIR addendum. Are you familiar with that issue and that site and what the EIR addendum says about that site or why it's excluded? Or
absolutely.
I have more information if you want me to read it, but I don't know if you're.
Yes. That's a good segue. So that site, CA Slow 16, was identified in the EIR, was identified in the programmatic agreement with SHPO, and it is an area that we are going to be paying attention to. It's probably the most important archaeological area in the pipeline alignment. We made the decision to exclude the monitoring, and that site we know is going to have mitigation. So they're part of the work that we've been doing over 2020 that was required by the programmatic agreement was, again, our project archaeologist, Far Western. They went out and drilled small holes in the ground and took borings to identify or clear different areas of the project. And they did borings in that area and identified that there were archaeological artifacts in that area. So we know we're going to have to do mitigation. We made the decision in this RFP to exclude that area, and the intention is to negotiate and bring to council a recommendation to award a contract amendment to Far Western in order to do that mitigation work. So we're going to have Cogstone doing the monitoring and the tribal monitoring for essentially the entire alignment, with the exception of that small section that we know is sensitive, and we're going to have to do mitigation work. We've known that there's money in the current WRF budget to complete that mitigation work. And we decided, based on Far Western's history and their work doing the investigations, that we would negotiate that work with them.
Okay. Thank you for that explanation. I appreciate it. That's my only question, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Heller. Appreciate that. Councilmember Addis, questions?
No questions at this time.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis, sir, questions?
No questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'll go ahead and open up public comment. This is public comment for item C-2 on the agenda. Public comment is now open. And Anthony, any public comment?
I do see a raised hand from Betty Wintholz.
Great. Welcome, Betty.
Betty, you're live.
Am I live?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. This is Betty Wintholz. I want to follow up on Mr. Heller's question about Site 16 and what kind of conflict or not conflict would there be between the two monitoring groups? It seems to me that seems awkward that you would have two different companies working on the overall project and then this particular site in particular. And what is the timing for the reconciliation of this particular site, and how does that timing fit into the overall plan? So I guess I'd like to know about the conflict and the timing of that. Thank you.
Thank you. Anthony, further public comment?
Mayor, I do not see any more raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you for that. I'll go ahead and close public comment on item C-2, bring it back to council. Eric, did you want to address Ms. Wintholz's question about conflicts between the two monitoring groups and the timing issue she raised?
Yeah, that's a Ms. Wintholz brings up a good question. And so just to maybe separate those two a little bit, we're asking the firm that we want to award a contract here tonight to monitor the areas of the remaining areas of the pipeline. As I mentioned, based on our investigations, we don't think we have a high likelihood of finding artifacts throughout the pipeline alignment. And that's because of all the investigation work that we've previously done. So our fingers crossed the investigation work that we've done holds up and we don't encounter anything during construction of the remaining section of the pipeline. As I mentioned, we do know that there are known archaeologically significant elements in that section that we're talking about. We're not really doing monitoring there. We're doing mitigation. So
what's going to happen there is that the contractor is going to open up a section where that mitigation needs to take place. And the archaeologist team is going to come in there. So the contractor will open up that section. So do some excavation. They'll move on to another section of the project, continue to work on the other section of the project while the archaeologist team goes through there and clears that site. So one, it's two very different types of work, which is why we decided to split that up. And then number two, as I mentioned, for the monitoring activities, we're going to have a single tribal monitor monitoring most all of the activities on the remainder of the pipeline. In this single section, it is in Caltrans jurisdiction, and typically Caltrans will require all three interested groups or all interested groups to monitor at any given time. So it's a very different type of work, which is why we separated the two of those. And it was clearly delineated in the RFP that this is just for monitoring, not mitigation. And we were going to be handling that via a separate pathway.
Thank you, Eric, for that explanation.
The second part of that question, which is timing. We are eagerly awaiting the baseline schedule from the contractor, which we hope to be getting tomorrow. And so once we have that baseline schedule, we'll be able to schedule that mitigation work. So right now we have an overall duration for the pipeline project. We've been working with the contractor for the better part of 6 weeks to get them up to speed, and they're going to be delivering their baseline schedule to us in the next couple of days, which will allow us to then schedule that mitigation work and put a lot more detail into our program schedule based on their baseline schedule.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate the comprehensive answer to that great question or those two questions. With that, I'll go ahead and bring it back to council, either entertain a motion or any further discussion.
I move for approval, item C2.
Okay, motion by Councilmember Hiller to approve C2.
Second.
Second by Councilmember Barton. That would be for City Council to authorize the city manager to execute a contract not to exceed the amount of $264,918. Any further discussion? If not, roll call vote, please.
Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes. Thank you for that. Again, thank you, Eric and Rob, for the report and your presentation, Eric. Appreciate that very much. That brings us to item C-3. This is consideration of proposal and approval of contract with Kevin Merck Associates, LLC, for biological monitoring services for the water reclamation facility, lift stations, and offsite pipelines construction. And I, again, will turn it over, I assume, to Mr. Casares.
Actually, Mr. Mayor, I think I'll take this one.
Well, Rob, there you are. Thank you.
Similar to the last item, this is monitoring that's necessary for the construction of the pipeline and lift stations that will serve the new water reclamation facility. And staff is recommending we award a contract to Kevin Merck and Associates for biological monitoring services, and authorize the city manager to execute a contract not to exceed $71,310. As far as financial impact, the WRF budget includes an estimate of $100,000 for this portion of the project for biological monitoring, and KMA's proposal of $71,300,000 will not impact the overall budget or the rates paid by water and wastewater customers. Again, this RFP was released on October 8th, 2020, provided some requirements for that proposal based on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife's biological opinion and our final EIR for the project. We received a number of proposals, 10, including KMA's proposal ranging from Althaus & Mead, AES, JBD, S-Corp, Environmental Services, GPA Consulting, RENCON Consultants, SWCA Consultants, and Padre Associates. We've included KMA's proposal as an attachment to the report. KMA was based on unanimously by the same review team as the previous project, myself, Mr. Caceres, and Mr. Miller. KMA has been the project biologist for a number of years and was instrumental in preparation of the final EIR, the EIR addendum, and negotiation of the biological opinion and biological monitoring and training for the WRF. KMA is currently performing similar services on the WRF site. And with that, staff recommends the award of the contract of biological monitoring services for the conveyance system project to KMA based on this solicitation, the review process that took place in October 2020. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate the presentation and the recommendation. With that, I'll open it up for council questions. Council Member Davis, any questions, sir?
No, sir, I have no question.
Okay. Council Member Addis, any questions, ma'am?
I don't have any questions.
Okay. And Council Member Heller, sir, any questions?
Yeah, Rob, I have a question. Is a stream bed alteration agreement required for the pipeline portion of the project?
At two locations, the crossing of Willow Camp Creek and the crossing of Morrow Creek will require a stream bed alteration agreement from California Department of Fish and Wildlife. We're in process on that permit, submitted it in fall of last year. Unfortunately, you know, there's been a backlog with all the resource agencies with having to work from home and getting these permits approved. But we expect to be receiving that stream bed alteration agreement permit anytime now.
So I don't know the sequence of the pipeline work, but is there any chance the delay in getting some of these permits might delay work on the pipeline that would end up coming back to the city as change orders?
I don't believe so. We have not received the baseline schedule from Anvil Construction, but I don't believe they plan on starting with the pipe bridge. That's a longer lead time item. They'll have to have that fabricated first before they can get in there and do that work. So we expect to have that permit well ahead of them needing to install the pipe bridge. I would expect that they're going to need to get started probably with mobilizing for the bore pits for the crossing of the roundabout, because that's a long horizontal directional drill or boring operation that they'll be needing to do there.
Okay. Thank you, Rob. Those are my questions.
Thank you, Councilmember. Councilmember Barton, questions?
No questions.
Great. And I have no questions, Rob. Thank you. With that, I'll go ahead and open up public comment. This is public comment for item C-3 on the agenda, and the public comment is now open. Anthony, any public comments, sir?
Yes, I have Betty Windholtz with her hand raised. Just a moment. I'll go ahead and unmute her.
I'll be right back.
Welcome, Betty.
Okay, Betty.
Hi, thank you.
You're unmuted.
You're live.
I am live. Okay, thank you. This is Betty Winholtz. I want to talk about the Willow Camp Creek next to the lift station next to Limos. Have you asked to put fill into that creek? It is a wetland. It's a 100-year flood zone. And will you also need a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers permit for that area as well? That's my question.
Thank you, Betty. Anthony, any further public comment?
No, Mayor. I do not see any raised hands.
Okay. I will close public comment for item C3. Bring it back to council and ask Rob if you'll address Ms. Winholtz's question about Willow Camp Creek requiring fill and also anything with regard to U.S. Army Corps.
No fill in Willow Camp Creek due to it is a wetlands area, and we were looking to avoid a Army Corps permit there. So that will be a bore under the creek there to make sure that we don't impact those wetlands there. And like I said, we don't have an Army Corps permit for that work there.
Yeah, just one quick clarification. We don't have an Army Corps permit and no permit from the regional board, but our stream bed alteration agreement with CDFW will cover that crossing as well. So
yes, it'll include a frack out plan to make sure that the drilling mud doesn't get into the creek.
Okay. Thank you for addressing that. I appreciate it. With that, I'll bring it back, entertain a motion. I'll go ahead and move that the city authorize the city manager to execute an agreement in the not to exceed amount of $71,310 for the approval of the contract with Kevin Merck and Associates for biological monitoring services for the WRF lift stations and offsite pipelines construction.
Second.
Motion by Mayor Hetty for the staff recommendation. Second by, did I get Councilmember Davis first? I think that was what I heard. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call vote, please.
Mayor Hedding?
Yes.
Councilmember Davis?
Yes.
Councilmember Addis?
Yes.
Councilmember Barton?
Yes.
And Councilmember Heller?
Yes.
Motion carries 5-0.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you, Rob, very much for the presentation and staff report. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good to see you and Happy New Year. That brings us to item D, Council Declaration of Future Agenda Items. Do we have any? I see Councilmember Addis, your head shaking.
I have two. The first I mentioned earlier in the meeting, and I want to thank Councilmember Heller for his support in this discussion already, but I'd like to ask that my colleagues agendize writing a letter supporting impeachment. And I think we could do that with a very, very short timeline. It's the letter I'm proposing is about 8 sentences long and would just say that the Morro Bay City Council joins calls for President Donald Trump's immediate removal from office, either by invoking the 25th Amendment or by impeachment for inciting violence against the government of the United States. Donald Trump's bid to overturn the results of the free and fair election that he lost cannot be met with silence. Our democracy belongs to the people. It is imperative that we hold those who violently attacked our capital and who promoted such attacks responsible. We join other local, state, and federal leaders to support this effort for the sake of our democracy, the very democracy that provides us the privilege to serve. And so I would ask if we could agendize that and hold a special meeting to get that letter signed as soon as Friday.
Is there general support for that, ladies and gentlemen? Looking for
I supported it, although it seems like more than 8 sentences.
It feels like it, but and it doesn't have to be that letter, but that's the letter I have.
Okay. I support it as well.
Do we have to, Mayor Hedding, do we have to wait until Friday? I note we have a closed session meeting scheduled for tomorrow. I don't know the time frame. Can we declare an emergency and add this special meeting to that same time frame?
Chris, let me have you weigh in. Is this something that, per policy, the mayor could write basically now, or do we need to agendize this for a special meeting?
I believe
pursuant to Morro Bay's policies, if the mayor is going to sign a letter saying the council believes X, Y, or Z, regardless of the gravity of the situation, the council needs to vote on it and take public comment on whether or not that letter should or should not be sent. There's a 24-hour requirement for noticing a special meeting, so unfortunately it's too late to notice a special meeting for tomorrow.
Okay, so we do have support for that, and we do have support for agendizing it rapidly. So I'll work with staff and Chris to get this agendized in a special meeting. Wouldn't be tomorrow, perhaps the following day. Okay. All right.
I could make Thursday work. I can also make Friday work.
Well, we will poll you folks and make it such that we also can include the public as well. Very good. Thank you. And any other future agenda items?
The other one, I had one other that I was hoping council would support. I noticed during this process of board interviews, and I noticed this last year too, that it's very hard to recruit. And then we had a number of people drop out of the process. And I received two different emails from community members making suggestions about the process. Not so much from a policy perspective, but how we enact the policy. And so I was hoping we could create a subcommittee to take a look at what we could do better so that not only do we get more applicants, but that the applicants don't drop out before we've even had a chance to vote. I was very concerned with the number of applicants dropped out, and it made me think that we could improve our actions and the way that we carry out our policy. And so asking, I think, to create a subcommittee, we would need to have this as a future agenda item. Correct. So that we could vote to create a subcommittee.
Correct. We would have to agendize that, and I would support it and be happy to work with you. Well, we'll let council decide that, obviously, but I would support agendizing the item if
would love to have you work with me, Mr. Mayor, if council would like the two of us to work on this.
That would occur at the time we agendized it, and so that would be the time. But do I have general support for that?
I have a comment, if I could. What you said exactly, Councilmember Addis, but given what we said earlier in the meeting about what's really on the front burner, I'm going to oppose agendizing it at this time.
Yeah, and from a priority standpoint, it may not come very quickly. And I can tell you we have some other pressing items that would come ahead of it. But if there is general support, we'll add it to the list and bring it back at an appropriate time. So looks like we have two.
And I do think, just to clarify, I'm not asking staff to do any work. I'm asking council to appoint a subcommittee so that a couple council members could start to dig into, what do other cities do? How do people get people to apply and go through the full interview process? How could we improve our recruitment? But the first step is really for a couple council members on a subcommittee to start finding out what's out there and how we could do this better. And then come back at some, later date to talk about. And I don't even know if that would require staff to do much. We just don't know unless we have a couple people that can look into it.
So I have two council members. I'm looking, is there a third council member?
I support that.
Okay, so we do have majority support for that. Thank you, council member, for your concern. Council member Heller, for your concern, I share it. And I will make sure, since we have agreement, that it does get prioritized, not ahead of things that obviously we talked about this evening, like COVID-19 response, et cetera, et cetera. So you have my word on that. That's a lot. We have a lot on the agenda. I will take any burning desires, if there are any other. If not, okay, great. Thank you so much for that. Happy New Year to everybody. That adjourns this meeting. The next regular meeting of the Morro Bay City Council will be held on Tuesday, January 26th, 2021 at 5:30 p.m. via teleconference. Be safe and be well. Thank you and good evening.
Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
Night. Thank you.
Night, Dana.
Thank you.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, Anthony. Have a good night.
You as well. Thank you. Great job today, everybody. Thank you.